Welcome to Mallet and Michelle on Dripping Springs, hosted by me, Michelle Lewis, and Steve Mallet, who thinks most people should use a glue stick instead of chapstick.
Yes, that's really good. I like that. I was just telling Holly this morning that I could go live up in a cabin in the woods and only see people like once in a while when I came down out of the sticks to go to the grocery store, and I'd be happy as a clam.
That sounds a little bit like the Unabomber. I'm just saying.
Yeah. And Michelle Lewis, who hates math and goes deaf if you ask her to figure out a percentage.
If you ask me to figure out a percentage like at Home Goods, I can.
Oh, well, that's true. Yeah.
But
if I said, hey, what's 26% of $1,295,000?
That's math. That's math. That's math.
You lock up.
No, for sure. How was your vacation?
My vacation was wonderful.
Yeah.
We went up to Oregon to Mount Hood area.
You went to the Antifa Training Center?
We drove through there, which I'll tell you about in a second. But we went to, we stayed in a cabin about 10 minutes from the base of Mount Hood. And the original idea for the trip was to do the Timberline Trail around the base of Mount Hood, which is 42 miles. And people do it in a day, but it's very challenging. We figured it was probably take us 16 hours. But even in the middle of July, there's still so much snow up there that we can't do it. The backside of the mountain had snow drifts for miles and miles and miles that were 8-9 feet deep.
Oh, I think it was like 111 one day.
It probably was.
In my car.
I got up one morning. It was 49 degrees. I had a sweatshirt on and I was cold. And then by midday we were hiking and it was 75 and it was just glorious.
It's so beautiful in that part of the country. It's such a shame that people have destroyed it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because it's almost like two completely different areas. Portland is a pit and terrible. But when you got, 10 miles outside of Portland, it was gorgeous, beautiful. There's little farms and little cottages and log cabins. And then you get up kind of where the pine trees start and it's just so pretty. There's streams everywhere. You know, all that melting snow comes down these pretty rocky streams. And we went, the last day we were there, we went paddling on this lake and the lake going north to south. You could just, the end of it was Mount Hood. It was just framed perfectly between the trees. I'll have to show you a picture.
Well, I told you before you went on vacation, I said, I want you to, in your mind, I want you to find that one picture that's going to take you back to serenity. And then I want you to, after you've enjoyed it, after you've soaked it in, I want you to take that picture so we can put it up in your office.
I need to.
So you can, that waterfall picture was gorgeous.
The waterfall picture was fine. There was a moment. So we did a 16-mile hike on the first day we were there, and we were headed out to do 20, but there was so much snow that we went through a 5-mile section where we would normally do 4 to 5 miles an hour. We were doing 1 mile an hour because we were walking on 6 and 8 foot deep snow with ice, and Holly and I fell a couple times, and there was creek crossings with, you know what a snow bridge is? Do you know what a snow bridge
is? I saw some. Was that the one picture that you took of her hopping across or something?
That was a log. A snow bridge is, so when you get these snowpacks down in these little, they're not canyons. They don't call them canyons there, but it's like a canyon area. Well, the snow builds up in there.
I don't know what a snow bridge is.
Yeah, when the snow melts above it, it runs down through that little canyon, and it doesn't melt the top. It melts below. And so you have these ice fields and it looks like big snowfield, but it's hollow underneath. And so you have to be really careful because you could be walking along and there's 6 inches of snow and ice and a 4 foot drop below that. So we actually broke through a couple of those.
What type of shoes were you wearing? Flip flops?
Trail running shoes. I wish I had had micro spikes. They make these things that you strap on your shoes that have these little tiny metal spikes. That would have been really helpful, but we weren't expecting to see that much snow, but there's still a ton up there.
So were you wearing shorts the whole time or?
Shorts, started out in shorts, a short sleeve shirt with a jacket on and beanie. And then I had to put my gloves on because all that snow, it was pretty cold.
But you're still wearing, did you bring pants?
No, I was wearing shorts.
Oh.
Your legs don't get as cold as the rest of your body.
Oh.
But what I was going to tell you
was.
I don't
know, you do have chicken legs.
I do have chicken legs. Yeah, me and Brandon Cruz, we got the chicken legs. But you were telling me to figure out the moment where I went, okay, work's out of my mind. It'll be there when I get back. It was on that hike and it was about 5 miles in. We were crossing the snowfield. The sun was coming up behind Mount Hood. Holly was behind me. Our friend Patrick was with us. I could see other snow-capped volcanic mountains off in the distance. I was like, screw it. Work will be there when I get back. And I didn't really think about it much after that.
That sounds gorgeous.
It was wonderful.
We tried to plug you out of work as much as possible.
You guys did great covering for me. It was good to come back. And then came back in 2 days, it was right back into the mix. The first day was rough.
Welcome to hail. Yeah. We should play the Sandman.
Well, I was going to tell you about Portland. So we flew into Portland Airport and, it's really pretty around there. Which just when you're flying in, you're like, wow, it's really a gorgeous city. Portland is a pit.
Yeah.
It was one of the most disgusting cities I've ever been in.
Was it just the, homeless population or was it?
It's the homelessness. It's the graffiti. It's the trash. There's needles and garbage in any place you look where there's open space. Uh-huh. It's covered with trash and human, you know what?
Yeah.
Just disgusting.
That was a shame.
Yeah. And we actually were driving on one of the freeways. I can't remember which one it was, but there was this like 4-story building. Old building, and half the windows were busted out, and you could tell that there was tarps and stuff on the window. That homelessness had just taken it over. It was like a homelessness encampment.
Go woke, go broke.
I guess. But I was doing a little research on the city just to kind of figure out. There's 666,000 people in Portland, which is kind of funny. 666.
It's the devil's lair.
Yeah. And it's just wild because you go just outside and you got the Columbia River Gorge, just one of the prettiest places in the world as far as I could tell. But anyway, 666,000 people. There's 14,000 homeless people there. And those 14,000 people are totally destroying that city for the rest of the population. Mm. And the government there could care less. They're doing nothing to take care of those other citizens.
I don't even know what to say, but it's just such a shame. It's such a shame. Just a cleansing needs to happen one way or the other, but it's such a shame.
Apparently 40% of the homeless in Portland have some sort of mental illness, and I'd be willing to bet the rest of them have some kind of alcohol or substance abuse issue. And the city's whole premise is that These are people that don't have any issues. They just don't have a place to live because they've been priced out of the community. That's not what that's about.
Is it just me or do like when I go down Lamar, when I'm taking that 290 or 71, like where it crosses into South Lamar, where it kind of splits off, like when you're going towards Matt El Rancho and stuff like that, there's that one section of the interstate right underneath where I feel like there's an encampment.
And that's been cleaned up.
But then I go the next day, excuse me, and it's back again. And then we'll go down
the way it was. The way it was,
they had fence.
It was
around
a city. It was a small town of homelessness. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean if the city's going to spend money, I know we've talked about this, and nothing we say is going to make a change, obviously. But if the city spent money on mental health treatment and drug and alcohol addiction treatment, some of these people could be saved. These are good human beings. Yeah. They just are. They're broken right now. Mm-hmm. They can be saved. They can't be saved by saying, "Hey, you know what? You can pitch your tent right over there in our little city park." That you're just basically allowing them to continue that behavior with no impediment whatsoever. And the city of Portland doesn't. You could sit on the street corner in Portland and shoot up heroin, and a police officer will walk by, and he will not do a thing.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah,
that's nice. Yeah,
we went into REI. They have one of the nicest REIs that I've ever been to in downtown Portland, which we were actually scared to go because it's right where the riots were.
Oh.
And there's boarded up buildings and it's coming back. Uh-huh. A lot of the graffiti's taken down. But we went into the REI and right by the door is this like SWAT looking armed guard with body armor, says security on the front of it, you know, all black. And I was like, well, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
And when we were checking out, I asked the guy, so what's with the security guard? He goes, well, we have people that come in every day and they steal something from us. He said, we have one guy that goes to the backpacks and takes the most expensive backpack we have and walks out the door with it every day. And I said, you guys don't do anything? He goes, well, we had a security guy and he tried to stop him and the guy tried to stab him. And so then corporate said, well, okay, you can't stop them anymore, but you can pepper spray them. And they pepper sprayed one guy twice in one day. And then finally corporate said, that's not working. So they're like, they don't even know what to do. That store could close down.
I would not blame REI if they did close, because yeah. How does a business sustain just constant loss prevention, just loss?
Well, and you were saying it the other day, some guy, what store were you in? Some guy loaded up like $400 worth of stuff and walked out.
Yeah. And he had a big old cart and he just walked out and it was going beep, beep, beep. And we were buying stuff for my daughter's first apartment.
Yeah.
And I was like, are they going to stop him? And she goes, no, we can't stop him. And I looked at my cart of stuff and I was like, oh, you could do that?
All of us law-abiding citizens are paying for all these other people to do these despicable things, and they should be in jail. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, instead of spending money and going buying a hotel, Mr. City Council person, buying a hotel that's going to be destroyed by the homeless population, why don't you hire another 20 police officers and get them to help clean up the streets and throw some of those people in jail so they can get treatment?
That's logic, Steve. such logic. I don't know why you think that applies in the situation.
It used to make sense. I don't know. It's it was a shame to me that, you know, all these people living in probably one of the prettiest parts of our country have to live with that.
Yeah.
It was atrocious.
Well, I'm sorry that you had to experience that, but I'm so glad that you and Holly got to go unplug for a little while.
That was a trip of a lifetime.
And good.
It was. It was a trip of a lifetime. We did a section of the Pacific Coast Trail that was, it was breathtaking the whole way. Just gorgeous.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, good. When's your next vacation? Can I?
Actually, we talked about going back in September to try and do the Timberline Trail.
Okay,
that 42
I'll put
mile
it on the calendar. Yeah,
you know what? We ruled it out because the days are shorter then, and we'd have to do probably 4 hours of it in the dark, which means you'd miss all that scenery.
Yeah,
so
I don't know.
We may do it next year, but you held down the fort. Thank you very much while I was gone.
You're welcome.
You did a great job.
I've come to learn that I don't like your job very much. I don't like being Steve Mallett.
I don't like your job, so this works out good.
I don't like being Steve Mallett. But you know, I with the market kind of cooling off a little bit, it's not, you know, cooling off and it's just more of a stabilized market.
More
like
of
what
a
you're
normal
saying.
Market, yeah.
We're kind of back to doing some of the things that we were doing when we were more in a frenzied market.
Right.
And you know, we've always, even during the frenzied market, we were still doing the pre-stage and recommending vendors and the staging and the professional pictures and photos, drones, twilights, you name it. Right. We never stopped doing that.
We did that even when good agents got to the point where they were just snapping six cell phone pictures.
And
we still did everything we've always done.
I just saw an MLS listing yesterday. Cedric and I were laughing about it. And there was a dog and a half of a guy in the picture. I was like, no, that's just lazy.
Yeah,
even you're already with your cell phone, but that's just lazy.
Unfortunately, back in the craziest part of that market, it didn't matter. You could take a picture of a clown standing on the front lawn and have that be the only picture, and that house would have still had 20 offers.
Okay, so you know what I'm back to doing, Steve?
What's that?
Okay, now it's a little quirky and it's a little odd.
Oh, I know what it is.
I'm burying the St. Joseph statue on some of our listings. And
some of our listeners right now are going, what?
Yeah, and I think it's, like I said, it's quirky, but it's just like, superstitious, you know, just like a football player when they leave the tunnel, they tap the top, or, you know, somebody must have their favorite jersey on or something like that. It's just superstitious, but it's
weird to me
because it's worked 100% of the time.
It has worked 100% of the time. We had just a listing we put on right before I went on vacation, and you did it the first day, and I got two offers on it like within 24 hours.
So it's a Catholic tradition. So the Southern Baptist is doing a Catholic tradition, but it's the intent behind it is it's goodwill for a fast, smooth, profitable sale. And the tradition is you're supposed to bury it upside down. And some people say you either burying it upside down facing toward the house or away from the house so it knows it's a symbolic for leaving the home.
Oh, yeah.
I bury it upside down. First, I use a screwdriver.
I dig a hole,
and I put it by the sign. And so there's also other things. You put it by the sign, by the road. Some people say put it in the backyard.
But you also have to talk mean to it.
So yeah, so I talk mean to it. And I say, you're not coming out of this hole until you sell this house. And then I push it down with my foot because I've dug the hole with the screwdriver because, you know, most of the lots out here are pretty rocky. And then I bury it back up. And I have learned over the years to bury it by the sign because a couple of times I have lost
where it was. Well, I can't remember that listing. We did. We had one. We poked around in the yard for like half an hour trying to find it.
I'm trying to remember where that was.
Because the last part of that is if you don't dig him up, it brings bad luck, right?
So you're, the whole thing is quirky, but.
Obviously it's quirky.
But you're supposed to dig it back up and put it in a place of honor afterwards, like honoring him.
Okay.
Well, I put it in a place of honor, which is my toolbox and my trunk to be used at the next house.
Where he gets a free ride everywhere he goes.
Absolutely. Yeah. I rinse him off, you know, if he's got a little dirt on him.
I rinse him off.
But just know that here at Mallet Integrity Team.
We go the whole way. We go 100 yards on every run.
Well, I've just been exhausted. Yeah. I am just drowning in work.
You and I both.
Oh, it's, goodness.
It's weird when people look. A guy at the gym this morning said, hey, how's real estate? It's probably slowed down. I'm like,
yeah.
When it has not slowed down.
No.
It's not slowed down even a little bit.
I am the busiest I have ever been working with you for seven years. The absolute busiest.
It
so
is
if
crazy.
They say, oh, the bubble is bursting, I'm like, where is
that? Yeah. Yeah. I almost sometimes go, yeah, please burst at least a little bit.
Yeah, just a little. Thank you, Steve Mallet, for being who you are and for having your expertise in what you do, because I have
Thank you, Michelle Lewis, for having your expertise in what you do.
I have no desire to sit in your chair. Absolutely.
Well, it's exactly the same for me. Some of the stuff that you do, people ask me, hey, I know Michelle does this for you, but do you know how to do it? Like, I don't know how to do that. Michelle takes care of that.
Don't look at Michelle. She doesn't know how she does it either.
Yeah. But, well, Brad's coming in. Brad Hurlbut.
Oh, goodness. Buckle up, friends.
Yeah. Brad's an awesome guy.
Yeah.
But if anybody has lived here in Dripping Springs for any period of time, you have heard the Hurlbut name. There used to be a giant Hurlbut ranch out here. It was 7,000 acres, I think.
So or larger. I can't remember.
Maybe it was bigger.
Larger.
Yeah. But Brad's a descendant of that family. And he was part of Willie's Picnic back in 1973. So we're going to hear all about that.
One of their claim to fame is the 4th of July picnic.
Yeah.
I'm excited to hear what he has to say. I'm sure we're going to hear a lot from Brad.
Yeah, Brad's a great guy. So we're going to take a quick little break and get Brad in here, and we'll talk to you in a second.
This show is brought to you in part by the Mallet Integrity Team, serving Dripping Springs, Austin, and the surrounding areas of Central Texas since 2004. When you need the best real estate advice and service, give them a call at 512-829-2062 or email them at malletintegrityteam.com.
Well, welcome back. We're here with Brad Hurlbut. Very famous Brad Hurlbut of the Dripping
infamous.
Springs Hurlbuts.
The infamous Hurlbut.
Yeah. The infamous Hurlbuts, yeah.
Now that I know what the word means.
Yes.
Welcome to the show, Brad.
Yes. Yeah. I'm glad to be here.
Well, good. Yeah. Well, how long you lived in Dripping Springs?
I've lived here since 1972.
Okay. And where'd you move from?
Corpus Christi. Yeah.
And how old were you when you moved here?
I was 65. That's kind of.
Were you born in 65?
Yeah.
So we were trying to figure out today how old you were.
Can you tell the viewers your social security number too?
Just 461-98. And then you can go through the rest of it.
Yeah. I lost track. You were 8 years old?
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much born and raised in Dripping Springs.
Pretty much,
for those
first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. We got a long history in Corpus as well, but I spent most of my time out here.
Long history as far as like your family?
Oh, history? Yeah. My family goes back way back in Corpus.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Interesting. What,
do you still have family down there?
They're not. I don't have anybody alive anymore.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And what brought you to Dripping Springs originally?
My grandfather bought a place in 39 out here, and my dad would bring us up every weekend. And
a place. So when you say a place, our listeners imagine like 3 acres with maybe a little hilltop and a house. So define place.
I don't know the exact acreage, but I've been told it was around 7,000.
7,000 acres.
He bought it out of a foreclosure in 39. And,
do you know what he paid for it?
I have no idea.
Wouldn't that be nice to know?
Yeah.
Like $4.
Yeah. Yeah. Possibly. Yeah.
It was probably like 30 or maybe 50 an acre or something, mm-hmm. probably. Wow.
Might have been. Yeah.
And what what did your grandfather do? Why did he?
He was in the oil business. He actually found the first big lease for Humble Oil, which was the predecessor to Exxon back in the day in Flower Bluff, actually.
Okay.
And sold it for a whole lot of money. And he's written up in the who's who of oil men.
Really?
Yeah. So he was a friend of the Hunts. And we'll get into it later. Darryl Royal was a good friend of his.
Really?
I mean, it's a lot of history there. Yeah.
Huh. So that was your grandfather.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, on my dad's side.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then what did your dad do?
My dad was in the oil business. He was dabbled in politics, some real estate. He did real estate out there, you know. So, I mean, he did a lot of different things, but mostly oil.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did he run for office? Did he have an hold
No,
an
he
office?
Didn't. He was a big contributor to the Republican Party back in the days of Reagan, actually. So he would go. I went to Washington with him a couple of times to certain things. It was kind of cool, you know. But it was very interesting in politics and stuff. He was when Clements was in office here. He was a big supporter of his. Okay. So that was back in the 80s, a long time ago.
I don't even know what that was. Was he
Governor Clements?
Governor Clements?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So you're the first generation that broke the oil business streak.
Yeah, yeah.
You're
pretty
not
much,
in the oil
yeah,
business.
Yeah, yeah. I just, you know, it just, I didn't, I really guess I wasn't, none of us were interested. Eight kids, none of us jumped into that thing for some reason because I guess we just let them handle it, you know, and. My dad, my uncle, and my grandmother—all those—they continue to collect royalties.
Oh yeah,
ever since then, pretty much. And so we just never got. He would take us out of school on Friday to go see a well come in.
No way.
Yeah, he'd say, "Hey, we're going. Let's go."
Where would you have to? Where were you driving to do that? Because there's no oil out here.
Well, right? It was like I don't know. Maybe down to the coast. I don't know. There's just various places.
Yeah,
so we'd watch the water come out, and then all of a sudden you start seeing oil squirt.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden we would go out there. And he had us go out and get samples. He wouldn't do it, you know, in the water. You know? But anyways, yeah. I actually have some of those samples still to this day. But it was. We were in there. We just never got into it for some reason, you know. Yeah. So
that's not how they do oil now, right? They don't just let it just spew out all over the ground. I don't think they do it now.
Well, I don't know. They probably have for an environment. Back then, they didn't care. You know?
It's just like
we had, you know, whatever they pumped into the ground there was no, it just was a pit they did. And they just let it, you know, go down in our water table.
Times are different.
Yeah.
Down in the water table.
Yeah.
No wonder. I was wondering why you had 3 years.
Well,
I didn't know what was.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that 7,000 acres, when did that? Because it's not there anymore. It's all split up.
Yeah.
When did he start selling pieces of that?
Well, my grandfather died on the ranch in 69.
Okay.
What he used to do is he would go out there to decompress because it was just, I know he was just had a lot of responsibility and stuff. So he was taking a tractor actually up the hill right there by Independent Ranch, right down from my brother.
Okay.
And lost control of it, rollover.
Oh.
Yeah. And, and it killed him.
Oh,
so and so after that, it seems like the ranch started kind of unraveling, you know.
Yeah.
So a little bit. So and it just and then we've ended up with like 138 acres with some good river frontage, and we got the Dead Man's Hole on there and stuff like that. So.
So Independence Ranch, that was the original gate to the ranch, to the whole ranch.
No. If you go down that, before you make a right to go to Independence, there's a road that goes down the hill. My brother's, Brandon's, was the original front entrance of the ranch.
Okay.
Yeah. So and then you come up that hill. So a lot of those roads they put into place a long time ago. My dad put in a bunch of roads. It was all caliche forever. So my mom, we had four or five creeks to go over. And so if it ever rained, my mom would call in the school. They're not going to make it.
They're not coming
in
today.
Sweet, man.
Praying for rain.
Yeah. And they were all caliche roads. So, yeah. I mean, we would get stuck. My brothers would, you know, drive crazy on those roads. But if we got stuck, you know,
what are you gonna do?
We weren't going to go to school either.
Yeah.
So it was about a 9-mile walk back to the house, you know.
Wow.
Was Harmon Hills there in the back, there's Hurlbut Road. Was that part of the original ranch?
No, actually, that my dad helped develop Harmon Hills.
Oh, okay.
And so there's a lot of roads out there, like Carroll Lane was my godfather.
Okay.
And then that was my mother's road, Hurlbut Lane there. And there were various other roads, but he helped develop that out there at the time.
One of them's Breed Road. That's
Truman Breed. And they were buddies, and they were part. He was part of the investment out there.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't see any Brad Road.
No, there wasn't any. I hadn't made my mark yet. Yeah. You know.
You still got time, man.
Yeah, I know. I'm
57.
Working on it.
57.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. You still got time. We're young.
So your grandfather passed away in 1979.
But 69.
59.
60.
69. 69. Michelle. 69. Yes.
I wasn't born yet. So 69. Okay, 69. Then in 72, who decided to have this picnic, this little tiny get together of friends just sharing some music? And how did all of that come about?
It came about through Daryl Royal and I think Eddie Wilson may have been involved in that. And they were, of course, friends with Willie Nelson. So the first one we had was a reunion. And it was, you know, a lot of – we had, like, Dottie West and Tex Ritter.
I read Loretta Lynn.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Loretta Lynn was there.
Wow.
Buck Owens.
Oh, yeah.
And this is one of my favorites here.
Oh, yeah. He was there. Roger Miller.
Roger Miller was there. Yeah. That's big time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it was kind of thrown together willy-nilly.
Yeah.
You know,
willy-nilly, no pun intended.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
We're talking about the 4th of July.
No, this is
the reunion.
This was reunion, but it was before. But it was on 4th of July.
It was in 72. I don't think, I can't remember the exact date.
Okay.
It may have been, but I wasn't sure. And so, of course, there's one way in and one way out of the ranch. So the traffic on both sides of the roads went out of the ranch, went on to McGregor and Bell Springs all the way to 290.
Oh, geez.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. So
and this was for the reunion.
For the reunion it was that many people out
well,
there.
Well, and I had heard that the reunion was kind of a flop, is what I had.
Well, I mean, there were a lot. I mean, you can go back and look at some pictures. You see, there's a pretty good crowd. That's the thing. None of this was a money making deal at all.
Yeah.
And it was kind of interesting. So I just read a story recently, and I know that Willie is like they've always been chasing him down and stuff on the. On the picnic, it was a cash transaction.
Okay.
So people came in free and they walked in, everything like that. So the IRS actually took a sample of the crowd and counted them and did the math and saying, hey, your proceeds are not matching up.
Oh, my gosh.
So there was I've heard stories between 40 and at the picnic, 40 and 60,000 people.
Yeah, that's
people.
What I heard too.
How much was it to get in there? Do you know what it was?
Probably $5.
I saw a ticket somewhere. I'll have to. It had a ticket on.
By the way, this next one is his 50th.
50th.
Yeah.
Wow.
And next year in 2023. Yeah.
Well, so. That makes sense. Yeah. 1973.
I'm planning on making that. I've been to several of them. Been to the 30th and stuff like that. But yeah.
And a little background on that. Apparently, Willie had been in Nashville up until I think 71. And in Nashville, all the music executives were trying to get him to go all glitzy and get a slick image. And he wasn't having it. And then I guess his house burned down in Nashville. And he's like, I'm out of here. I'm going back to Texas.
I'm actually reading his book that him and his sister put together.
Uh-huh.
It's a very good book. And it talks about all that stuff. But so when it was back in the reunion, he was kind of somewhat clean cut.
Yeah, right, I saw. Right.
Yeah,
yeah,
and then,
some
and
pictures
then over and over a year, that's Hank Snow there.
I think.
But over a year time, he kind of roughened up a little bit, you know, and started hanging out with different people and stuff. So it was a quick transition between 72 and 73, you know. Yeah.
Was this a weekend that your dad brought you down?
No, we were actually probably up here because our house was right behind it.
Uh-huh.
And that goes
right behind where the stage is?
No, right behind where we had a house that was right behind the venue, basically.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
So we could just walk down.
Wow.
Whenever, well, so.
Do you remember any of it?
Oh, yeah, I do. I have pictures of me running around at the reunion, which I was still pretty damn young, uh-huh. you know, so, but with my brother, you know, and hanging out backstage uh-huh. and stuff. And then for the picnic, I actually had my first job. So
yeah.
I heard and that
the,
some
the
of the jobs.
The picnic was 1973, but yeah. what was your job?
I was selling sodas.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. And I made $15 for 3 days.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, $15. I heard.
Nickel for a pop.
Yeah.
Security there was 123 men on foot. There were 40 horses that would troll around the perimeter, and a highway patrolman and two helicopters around. And yeah. But so people complained about the security, and you had mentioned something earlier when you and I were talking about it. There was an accidental shooting.
Oh,
or
yeah, they were talking about it.
Oh, yeah, I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Every once in a while they'd have an announcer go up on stage, and some of the public service, he would say, stay away from the green acid.
Oh, yeah.
and then another one is, some people have been eating mushrooms and getting sick.
Oh, God.
And then there's some bad cocaine going around.
It was blistering hot on top of that, you know. To add to it, you know, it was, I remember we were down by, they had bales of hay down by the stage, and so we got a little fire going when it's hot outside, right? The hay, you know, here's that fire thing, you know.
Oh, God, geez.
It just bellows onto the stage, you know, because hay turned like, anyways, we had to put the fire out.
Like
yeah.
a smoke machine.
I don't know why we did it during the heat. There's something about the heat of summer and a nice cozy fire.
You're lucky it didn't spontaneously combust.
Oh, yeah.
Did how long did your family's property host concert venues there?
We did two. And then we had a third one that it was at Gatlin Creek.
Uh huh.
So, and that was a rock show, actually. So,
what part of Gatlin Creek?
I don't know, but you could probably find it online. That was like a vague thing. I just remember, I think the Jefferson Airplane, Foghat,
really?
All those people.
Goodness
were there,
gracious.
So, yeah, I wonder if that was down the Storm Ranch, because the Storm Ranch part
could have been.
Goes up to.
But then 1976. Something happened.
Oh, yes.
So what happened?
We're going back to that fire thing.
Yeah, we're
going
to go back to the little pirate.
So our house is right behind that, like I said, and I walked down there on a blistering August day, and I found myself a Sterno can and a lighter and a stump, a ring. And by that time in 76, the grass had all grown up. So mm-hmm. we still had concession stands. We still had medic booths and bathrooms.
Were these
and
all like stick built little structures?
No, they plywood. I mean, they put them out there, just dropped them out there and stuff. And then we had the sound, the lighting tower in the center. Uh-huh. So that was metallic, thank God. But anyways, I went down there and found myself a stack of stumps in August. And I think I was, 76, 10 years old, whatever. And I started a little fire.
Oh, yeah.
Down there, and I thought I had put it out, and so and so I went home and laid down on the couch to take a little cat nap. And my dad comes in, he said, 80 acres up in smoke. So I burned down the stage.
Oh,
I burned down everything. So I changed my family scope of earning a living, you know, in a matter of an afternoon.
What,
you know?
What year did you own up to this to your dad?
Well, I was in my 40s.
So now in the family, they're probably like, oh, did you brat it?
Yeah. So, yeah,
it's funny. There's a picture there of the concert venue, and there's a little wooden building, and it says Sausages by Salt Lick.
Oh, yeah. So I don't remember the Salt Lick being out there, but, you know, the first year we had Cowtown off of this Verdes now.
Okay,
they catered to the first one. And then, but yeah,
where Verde's is now.
That used to be a barbecue joint.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was called the
off of Hamilton Port.
Yeah, yeah. What was it? I said it's not the Salt Lick. It's
Cowtown.
Yeah. So yeah.
And was Hamilton Pool Road was paved back then?
Oh, yeah. Remember? Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah, it was.
And at the picnic, there was some big stars. Chris Christopherson was there. There was, I think that's Stevie Ray Vaughan. Is that Stevie Ray Vaughan?
No, that's going to be Waylon.
Oh, that's Waylon. You're right.
Chris, and then him in the middle there.
Another picture I saw of the wedding, because there was a wedding out there, too. It was Paul English, which was Willie's drummer, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And Diane Huddleston, they got married.
Oh, wow. That's pretty impressive. I don't remember that. Yeah.
Look at this picture. There's a picture of he looks like a mountain man looking guy.
But he's got Harry a kitty Potter. With him?
He's got a kitty cat with him.
Oh, jeez.
290.
Oh, my just God.
Just going right up by, kind of by.
Well, that's what they said. It was like hippies and rednecks.
So, oh, yeah.
It was like everybody came together.
Willie brought us together.
Yeah, they called it the Country Woodstock.
I heard that the Dripping Springs locals, the residents there, called it moral pollution.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear that?
No, I didn't, but I could see they were probably raising hell because, you know, my dad was a hell raiser, so any of the old folks knew that. Oh yeah, look what he's doing now.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, and I read this years ago, but like you were talking about on Bell Springs and McGregor, because everybody just parked on the side of the road. She got 40 or whatever it is, 40 to 60,000 people. They were parked all the way out on 290, and they were walking into the venue.
And some people were
in
charging.
July.
Yeah, and some people were charging to bring in the back of the truck. And at that point, you're pretty damn desperate.
They thought Founders was bad.
No kidding.
They ain't seen nothing yet. Yeah. One way in, one way out. So his manager, I guess Lucas takes care of his dad now. Uh-huh. So he came out and I took him out there. They were thinking about doing a small venue out there as just a remembrance of the old days. And he said logistically it wasn't going to work out because they were going to have like 5,000 people and he had to put all that stuff together. But I went around with the history. I thought, man, how exciting would that be to have Willie come out and play again?
Oh,
you know,
no kidding.
Yeah. So it just didn't work out. So
I also read at the very end of all of it that Nelson was sued by your dad, or your dad sued him?
Yeah, for cleaning up the trash situation.
Really?
Yeah, but I took care of that with the fire.
The trash is gone.
Brad single-handedly ended the lawsuit.
Yeah.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah. No, I actually went out. We all went out there and cleaned up. It was a big mess because everybody left in a hurry. It was. I think there was a storm coming. I can't remember. Something caused everybody to up and leave. And so the next few days, we had dogs that were coming up that had been left out there.
Oh, my gosh.
We had
a kitty cat.
Yeah, kitty cat. I mean, all kind of interesting stuff. You know, they just pretty much left it and walked away. There were tents out there. It was just interesting. It made you curious to want to go clean up.
Yeah.
Because we found money. We found all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
So all kind of interesting things.
And back then, Dripping Springs was considered pretty long way away from Austin.
Oh, yeah. It was a hike
to get out here.
Yeah. Which is impressive because I've never been to a show, you know, where people were willing to park along the road forever walk forever to go in, you know. I mean,
I wonder how many people were there and knew that was going to be something historical.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's just, you know, if you were there, did you realize – if somebody was there, did they realize this is going to be talked about for a long time? Yeah.
Do you think of this part? Your family is literally a part of the Willie Nelson story, the Willie Nelson history. I mean, there's even a Wikipedia page about your family, which is kind of interesting. But do you find that to be the most interesting part of your family legacy?
I would say so.
Yeah.
I remember standing with my dad between Willie, Waylon, and Chris Christopherson.
No way.
When they were talking at our house. And, you know.
You're kidding.
Yeah. Wow. So they were negotiating something, you know, or talking about something. But my parents actually for the reunion, they went to Nashville and they brought back autographs. I have an autograph from Johnny Cash, and, you know, it says my name on there. All the kids got autographs.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
And we had, and at this, on the reunion, we all had autograph books. I don't know where they went to, but we had these cow hides that they made up that Everybody went around, and I have signatures from Dottie West, all those people, you know.
Wow.
I still have one of those at the house right now. But, yeah, it was just – I don't know. That whole thing was just – it was incredible. And
well, you're definitely part of Dripping Springs. Your family's definitely part of Dripping Springs history for sure.
Well, yeah. And that was – you know, after that, music became very commercialized
too. Oh, yeah.
Too. That was sort of like one of the last grassroots festivals that just kind of popped up
somewhere. Like it wasn't mass was produced. We had Scott Bennett on from Coke FM. Uh-huh. And so he was really talking about the outlaw.
I think that was, kind of when the term outlaw country started.
Oh,
too.
Yeah.
So that, and that would have been Willie and Chris Christopherson and Waylon Jennings and who else?
I don't know. I don't think Johnny Cash was on there.
No.
Yeah, Tom T. Hall.
Tom T. Hall. Well, I don't know if he was but he might have been.
Scruggs, okay. Tom T. Hall, Roy Acuff.
And Charlie Pride was at the first one, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
so we, after the show, we had when the original ranch house was still out there at that time, everybody came back to the ranch house.
Wow.
And we had a big pit that they, you know, had a half cow cooking on.
Wow.
And it was just, they were a funny story. So Tex Ritter, my dad, he wanted to go, I don't know what he wanted. We had some wild sheep. He wanted to go hunting.
That sounds like a great idea. Let's drink all day and go hunting.
And he was, you know, he had a few beers or something. I don't know. Anyway,
or something.
They went back and they let him go get a ram and bring it back. And
was that when they said, watch out for the green acid?
And then, right.
And then when they wanted to go CUT. So him and I don't know, Daryl Royal or whatever, they were dying to go. So you keep in mind, they have to cross over low water crossings.
Yeah.
I mean,
uh-huh.
Bridges that are just barely big enough for, well, I don't know whose ranch it was that they were going through. But somehow they drove off the bridge. Oh, and the guy called my dad. He said, I've got Tex Ritter here. You know, he said he's coming from your ranch to go to Austin. You know, I don't know how he ended up here, but he drove off the bridge, you know. So
if you're going to have somebody drive off your bridge, it's going to be Tex Ritter.
Oh, yeah, of course. So,
Daryl Royal was of UT fame, right?
Yeah, he was the coach, forever. Yeah.
But he wasn't the coach back then, was he?
I don't know. I can't remember.
I think he became the coach later, right?
I don't know. I mean, Royal Stadium's named after him.
Well, I know, but what I'm saying, I think he became a coach much later on.
He was like a common person out there.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, they were out there. I mean, it was just like me going around. You
really?
Know? So
how did your dad meet him?
My granddad.
Oh, your granddad.
Yeah. So they were like friends. I don't know. It's just somehow they connected somehow, you know. Maybe my grandfather might have been a supporter for UT. I'm not sure.
Right here.
Yeah. We're looking at when he coached.
He started coaching in
1956.
Wow.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize it was that long.
I didn't either.
Yeah. So 56 through how long?
A long time.
1969, 1962. Yeah.
We're going to have to cut this. We have way too much.
No, that's all right.
62 to 80. No, that was the AD. We'll have to look it up. We'll get back to you.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I had heard some stories. I'm not going to say it's your family, but somebody that had owned large pieces of land out here told me that back in the 70s and 80s, when they would get sick of a car or it started to break down, they'd go dig a great big hole someplace in their ranch and bury it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And then file an insurance claim. Have you ever heard that before?
I haven't, but we used to find cars that have driven back into the cedar breaks.
Really?
Where you just disappear, you know?
Yeah.
And nobody in them, you know? It's just, I know we found a couple like that.
Yeah.
So I don't, as far as the other ones getting buried, who knows?
Yeah.
That sounds like a serial.
You got 7,000 acres or 10,000 acres.
Oh, yeah. It's your own world, you know? Yeah.
How many acres now are left of the original?
We have 138 acres left. We have 2,200 feet of the river. We have a quarter of Dead Man's Hole.
So Dead Man's Hole, people that don't know what Dead Man's Hole is, What is that?
It's kind of a grotto, I guess, for lack of better words.
It's sort of like a little. It's sort of like a Hamilton Pool, but a little smaller.
And yeah. It's the sister. I think you told me one time it's the sister to Hamilton Pool, but that's on your property.
Yeah.
And you have people that are trespassing on there
all the time. Yeah. Me and my brother, a popular thing was to walk up from the river.
Uh-huh.
And at that point it was completely private. We owned it 100%. And so we would walk out there and we were just bored kids. We didn't know what we had at the time. I mean, it was our own world. You know, we had our horses and everything. There'd be a couple of nude swimmers down there. So he'd get on one. Brandon would get on one side. I'd get on the other, man, and just start throwing rocks down there. And they just leave their clothes and take off.
Wow.
Yeah. So
didn't Lance Armstrong own a place up north of the or up top of the
Yeah, he owned a quarter of that. There was a 230. There was a two. The last piece of land my dad had was 238 acres, and he ended up with that property.
Lance ended up with that?
Yeah. He was one of the best neighbors we ever had. I'm going to tell you, hands down, nicest guy ever. This is back when he was dating Sheryl Crow. They would come to my mom and ask her. They put a gate in there for her. They'd ask her if they could feed the horses.
Wow.
Super nice. And I met him several times. Yeah. Super nice guy, you know. So.
Boy, that's not the public persona that the media portrays.
Oh, I know. You know, it's the media, I guess. Yeah. But he seemed like he was a hell of a guy to me, in my opinion, you know.
Yeah.
Best neighbor we ever had.
Yeah. There was some hubbub about him not having silt fence up or something, and some of the neighbors sued him?
Yeah. It was, you know, I don't know where this is going to go. I kind of have a grudge against that, but anyway, so what he did, what we used to do all the time.
Yeah.
And my dad had heavy equipment out there all the time. Uh-huh. If he's going to make a lake, he's going to make a damn lake right there, you know. And so all he did was dug something out, which in time the hole would have just flushed out.
Right.
And I think that cost him a lot of money.
It did. I know
because
it
did. They vacuumed the hole out and brought it up and ran it through a filter and ran it back into the hole. And it was just – my mom, so the neighbors were, you know, telling, you know, hey, you know, this is – my mom had no problem with him whatsoever. And so she called Lance and said, hey, they want me to sign this document here. And he said, I'm not going to hold anything against you. Just go ahead and sign it, you know, keep the peace, whatever. So – but, yeah, it was just – it turned out to be a real – it was big – it was – it was a big to-do about nothing.
How long ago was this?
It was 10 years ago. Right? Yeah, that was about the time he was falling from grace for the doping with the Tour de France and everything.
Yeah.
So I think the media was just piling on.
You know, so, I mean, so forever that hole was blocked with a cypress tree. It had no flow out.
Okay.
And so everything pretty much, there was no plant life. It was stagnant. And so we had a guy go down there and cut the log out, haul out, actually cut it up in lumber. One of the Garnets has.
Oh, really?
Yeah, has a shed full of cypress. Beautiful.
Oh, wow.
Anyways, and so once that opened up and the floods came through, that thing cleaned out like nothing.
Oh,
and like right now, it's kind of stagnant because there's not much rain going on.
Right.
But it's just, I've seen the flow throughout my life, you know.
Yeah.
But anyways, it just Mother Nature takes care of itself.
It does. It definitely does.
So yeah. Anyways,
I've been down there to Dead Man's Hole, and it's beautiful. It's one of the prettiest spots in Dripping Springs.
We were out there last weekend, actually.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Is it pretty cool? Is the water pretty cool?
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah. Well, there's a massive spring. I've been down in that thing with tanks.
Really?
Yeah, so it was kind of a funny story. We had some friends from the Army that flew a Army helicopter out there. And parked it up on top for about 3 days. I'm going like, man, don't these people wonder where the damn helicopter is?
Isn't there some captain or somewhere? Where's my helicopter?
We're going to be taking this for a little spin this weekend. You know, so.
Throw the beer in the cooler in the back.
Yeah. No big deal. You know, it's a big helicopter. And so they brought their tanks and stuff. So I got to go down. At that time, that's when the visibility, when it was really bad.
Okay.
So you couldn't see far, but there's a massive spring kind of in the center there that's huge. I mean, it's probably, I'm going to say 6 or 8 feet wide.
Okay.
And so anything that's fallen in there, it kind of has pushed the brush off to the side like a big nest, basically. And they were hesitant to go down there because they didn't know if it was going to trigger something, whatever. But But yeah, it was really interesting. And I've also gone down there when it's been cleared out, and so you can go down. It's about 40 feet easily.
Holy
in the center.
Cow, yeah, bad. Jeez.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh, so, that's cool. Yeah. That's scary.
I know.
That's scary
to
think about.
We have underwater caves on the other side that they went down. It just goes down, down, down. You know.
Oh,
so,
I just get the heebie-jeebies just thinking about that.
I know.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Well,
no, thank
they
you.
Used to irrigate out of that thing way back in the day because, you know, in order to have any hay or anything, you had to get water from somewhere. You know,
they would pump it out of there.
Oh yeah, and they pumped it pretty low at one point, but I've never seen it get low like that ever. Huh. So yeah,
I bought a property out of Sycamore Ranch. This is like 15 years ago, out of foreclosure. It was a little house, and it had a little PVC pipe went down out into the yard, kind of down by this little creek, and there was a pump sitting on the side of this little spring, and a PVC pipe went down about 20 feet into the water, and they were sucking water out of that spring and pumping it into the house. That was their water supply.
Wow.
Yeah.
Got a little rock every once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brushing your teeth.
Yeah.
So Brad, you've grown up in Dripping. Where'd you go to school? Where'd you go to college?
I went to a couple of trade schools. I got into this college. It was incomplete for me. So I went off into the world and got involved and with people that I shouldn't have gotten involved with.
Oh, yeah. We want to know about that.
Well, it was just kind of one of those deals. I actually had gotten married back in, I don't know, when I was like 18, you know, and it was, all about, you know, I fell into a big drug scene for a long, long time. Thank God I came out, but years ago. So I went off in a different direction. I could have gone anywhere I wanted to. Yeah. It would have been taken care of, but I chose to take the hard way. And so I try to encourage any kid that's out there that you got to pick up something because it's hard to climb up the ladder, up the hill, you know, when you have to do it my way. I did it the hard way.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Well, I did too. Yeah, I did it the same way.
Yeah.
But you were telling us that you traveled through Spain and Portugal and North Africa in 97.
Mm-hmm.
So what was that?
It was just a vacation. It was kind of a backpack thing, actually. So it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
It was a quick trip, like 2 weeks, you know. And,
did you do it by yourself or with
friends? No, I had a girlfriend at the time. So.
Did you go to Morocco?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes, we did. Yeah. Crossed over, you know, Gibraltar.
Yeah.
You can see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was really cool. It really opened my eyes. The first travel, I was always like, "Oh, this is going to be cost prohibitive," you know. And so we traveled during Thanksgiving, and the prices plummet.
Oh yeah,
because they don't recognize Thanksgiving over there. You can go you could fly a round trip to Edinburgh for $350.
Oh my gosh, jeez!
But you have to get up to like New York or something like that.
Right.
Anyways, but back in those days, it was a lot cheaper to get around. But it was just and my second trip over there, I did the same thing during Thanksgiving. You know,
was that when you went to Great Britain?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that
was about 20 years ago.
Oh yeah, it's been a long time. I started to believe that much time has passed by.
I know it sounds like you've had just so many adventures in your childhood and your adolescent days and when you were younger. What are you doing now? Just sitting by the river?
Oh yeah, that's what I do. It's a cheap vacation.
The creepy old man down by the
river.
Oh yeah,
exactly. I sit down there, stick my feet in the water and stare at the air. Great deep compression.
Thank God you have that beautiful Laura to balance you out.
Yeah, yes, exactly. That's right.
And that's your wife.
Yes,
Laura.
It is.
That's your wife.
Interesting story there. So her brother was my best friend back in high school.
Oh, wow.
And I paid no attention whatsoever. We hung out, you know, and all that stuff. And then, you know, life went on 30 years down the road, whatever. And then we reconnected. And so,
and you've been married 3 years.
That's right. With three kids,
Michelle and I were both at your wedding, and we didn't know each other.
Oh, wow!
Yeah.
Well, we knew each other, but we didn't know each other. Yeah. Like our kids knew each other.
Yeah, that's true.
Our kids knew each other.
Yeah, Logan and Colton. Were friends.
So with three great kids on board.
Oh, gotcha.
I love every one of them. They're great kids, and
that Brianna is my spirit animal.
Oh,
I love that kid.
Yeah,
she's
got spirit. She is a. I don't know. She's a free spirit, I call her, you know, because she goes where she wants to do and she has ideas. So
I have the best story about Brianna, and she's probably going to kill me. I mean, not Brianna, but Samantha. Samantha and Logan dated in middle school. Did you know this?
No, I did not.
And
know that.
Samantha broke up with Logan at a dance, and he called me crying. Aww. Because Samantha broke, his heart was broken. And so he came home. He was very upset. Well, then like 2 days later, Samantha wrote me a letter and saying that she was going to miss me.
Yeah.
I'm going to read this one day at Samantha's. But Brianna is just recently married. So
yeah,
she's up in Alaska.
She's not up there yet.
Oh, she's not there.
She leaves on the 23rd. And she's going to be up there till they just finally got a place to stay up there. It's been kind of a real hassle. So, and she's already been up there once. And
Has she been up there in the winter?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and she's still going to go back.
Yeah. So it's going to be a challenge, but that's where he's stationed.
Yeah.
And, we don't know what's going to happen after. I mean, they may deploy him or may move him somewhere else.
Yeah.
But I know it's damn cold up there.
Yeah.
Brianna and Gracie were real good friends in school, and they still keep in touch.
Yeah,
she's a sweet
Samantha.
Sweetheart.
Samantha, Brianna, and is it Brianna or Brianna? I keep always say Brianna. Brianna. And then Ryan. Ryan's now in real estate.
Yeah, Ryan is. Yeah, he's venturing out in the
That's
world.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been from 7, 10, and 13. Were the ages that I picked up at there, past the diaper stage.
Yeah.
You know, I compliment you on that because you really stepped up when a lot of guys don't do that. They're like, they get married and they're like, well, those are your kids. You handle them. You stepped right in and stepped up. And
some people question my sanity.
No, you did good.
They question your sanity just
no matter what.
In general.
Yeah.
Just in general. Maybe we should question Laura's sanity.
Oh, yeah. Maybe for both of ours. Maybe if we put both of our sanities together, it would be a good, you know. But anyways. But yes.
Do you have any favorite stories from when you were growing up besides the one we already talked about?
I wanted to expand on the music thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a good story here. So my brother Blaine, who passed in 2004, he created a show called Wood Shock. And it was an opportunity for the punks to come out and perform. So the first one my mom was okay with. There were 3,000 people that showed up right in front of her
house.
Was
this at the ranch?
Uh-huh.
And okay. What year was this?
This is... 81, 82, something like that. So you can look at Woodshock, actually. Okay. It's online. So, but anyways, so it was an interesting situation whatsoever. It was actually, he held it down where the old ranch house used to be over on Lance's old place.
Okay.
And so we had people jumping off Dead Man Sideways upside down.
No way.
And the next day I was so afraid to go look. And so I was going to a technical school, trade school at the time. Uh-huh. And I remember there was only one way to leave. And there were people in sleeping bags on the road just sleeping. No tent, no nothing.
Oh, my God.
And so that show was a crazy show. I mean, it was like insane crazy. So my mom said, you know, she was okay with the first one, but the second one she was not okay with.
Yeah.
So my brother, so we had a paper stand, a statesman stand at the front of the ranch.
Okay.
They had it tied to there's a old telephone post there when they were giving out the paper. He would go get the paper for my mom and cut the articles out. So she would be reading and there's a square.
must have been a coupon, Mom.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. This is pretty funny. It said that it was an 80s festival that welcomed misfits.
Uh-huh.
That kind of describes you.
I've got a lot of... they actually did. There's actually video about it too.
So Richard Linkletter.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Was he there? I guess he was there.
Yeah, he did. He actually did a movie about it. And I've been talking to one of the guys that was one of the founders out there. My brother put it together with a friend of his and with a group of people. And my brother forced me at first into the music thing. I was going to, you know, the Allman Brothers. He said, come on, let's go.
Wow.
And I was going to all the different – I went to the Stones with them in 81, you know.
Jeez.
And a car with no air conditioning with weed on the dashboard, on the back, drying. And a Cuda Pop tire.
Oh,
there was a tire that had a bulge on it, and we drove it all the way to Dallas.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'll never forget the living arrangement. I said, are you sure you got it taken care of? He said, oh, we got it covered. you know.
You know, you're in a sleeping bag by the highway.
No, there's no sleeping bag. There's about 30 people in this hotel room just stacked on top of each other.
Kidding.
Yeah. I said, okay, you got it covered, right? You know, it's like I had to squeeze in there. No sleeping bag, no nothing, no pillow, you know, just like this.
Hopefully you're between two girls.
Yeah,
there,
yeah.
I'm surprised none of you, the brothers, ended up in the actual music business. Like, just didn't.
Well, I guess it just didn't really. It was just kind of, you know, we were on the valence of it, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. But he, you know, so he always did that. My brother, Blaine, I loved him to death. I miss him terribly. But he would always get me in trouble. And
I think you got yourself in trouble.
Oh, I did. Well, after a while it was, because I knew that he was getting me there. And I'm saying, like, there's something wrong about this. He's not telling me. And I would know it about 5 seconds before it was going to happen, you know? So anyway, but yeah, he was big. And well, anyways, finish the story. So all the punks showed up out there, uh-huh. And this time they put the stage in front of the house. My mom was going like, something's going on.
Yeah.
So anyway, so she called Alfred Homan and his deputies. And
this was sheriff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he came out, and it was just like the deputies and all the musicians, like, facing each other.
Oh,
right
my
here.
Gosh. Like a standoff?
Yeah. And while he was facing and trying to tell these people they weren't going to have it, my little sister, Brooke, removed his handgun from his holster.
You're kidding.
He didn't even know it. And
How old was she then?
Well, she's 43 now, so it, you know, puts her back.
10. So
this would have been about 10, yeah.
And she had it on the stage. And when they agreed not to, it was in the Chronicle, actually, too.
Yeah.
So they agreed that the show wasn't going to happen. So one of the punks said, you might want this. She was playing with it over there.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That would have been all over the national news these days.
So he had several more of these shows. And I got hoodwinked into every damn one of them, and I would get in trouble. I remember one year he had one that was at a soccer field off of Loyola, East Austin.
Okay.
And it was rugby.
Rugby.
Doctors, lawyers.
Oh, I know exactly where that is.
All,
that's been there.
All the wrong people you want to go do wrong with, you know, and they're big and they're mean, they're missing teeth and stuff like that. And I remember the negotiation was, you know, they said we had to stay out of their beer and stay out of their meat. They had a walk-in meat locker out there. Okay. What happens after the show, you know, somebody cut the power to the meat locker and they just broke the locks off. They had beer things that surrounded the room, you know, those little roll-ups.
Yeah.
And those punks just broke that thing off. And so after that show, they wanted to have a meeting. I didn't want to have any part of that meeting whatsoever. I just knew it was going to be a bad. You get a rugby player and a lawyer together at the same time. Oh, yeah.
Which ones were the punks?
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, that was crazy. So anyways, yeah, he had a lot of fun going on. That was our extension to the music business.
Yeah. Promoters.
What's your favorite kind of music now?
I listen to a lot of older stuff. I'm a big, what can I say? I like old stuff. Like Robin Trower is a big guitarist from the 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of go back to that, and I have some other, it's a cross section basically.
Yeah.
I can go John Prine, you know.
I haven't even heard of him.
Yeah. So
like Peter Frampton kind of?
Yeah, that Peter kind of Frampton. Stuff in that genre, you know. So I mean I cross it, you know, it depends on just what I am. And I, because of my brother too, also, I got to hang out with Stevie Ray Vaughan and stuff like that. So we would go the first 3 years that they did South by Southwest. It was not about making money or anything, but if you went and volunteered to stuff packets for one day, you got to go anywhere you wanted
to.
Wow,
jeez.
And so they always had the Austin Music Awards at the Ratskeller or something. It was below Palmer Auditorium. And so I was going down there. I was sitting, Stevie Ray here, his brother across here, all these people just all around me. This awesome situation there.
Legends.
Yeah, it was really cool. So my brother left me this – his catalog of his life.
Oh, yeah.
And it's his last, what he owned, you know. And So you go through that and you see these people in there, and it's just amazing.
These are photographs?
Photographs of him next to him, you know. I mean, it just...
You said you're putting together all these kind of albums for your mom, too, with pictures of days gone by.
Oh, yeah. I've been picking up stuff like what y'all had on here, the crowd and stuff like that. So I've been kind of intermingling them with a little bit. My mom's 83, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, and I actually want to do it for everybody, you know, just because there's just so much out there, you know. So
it's funny because people that have moved here in the last 5 years probably don't know any of this history. Especially the last 2 years during COVID, they think we're just like an extension of Austin.
Oh,
they don't realize the deep roots we have.
Oh, yeah, I know. They go back to the old days. I mean, you used to, back in those days, you could lay on Mercer Street and there was, you know, the car would just drive around you. You know what I mean? It just was, it was incredible.
You see yourself with all this history that you've kind of embedded yourself in, or your family has embedded them in Dripping Springs? Can you see yourself living anywhere else?
I don't know. I mean, maybe eventually, but right now it was, I lived in Austin for 30 years and I couldn't wait to get out of that town. Although I drive to it every damn day, you know.
And you came right back to DS. Yeah.
I came right back here. And so I moved to Dripping and then my family moved to Johnson City, you know? So, I mean,
and now they're moving out to Junction to get even further out west.
Yeah. So it's crazy. So, I mean, it's just, anyways, I it kind of saddens me, you know, to see the changes and stuff. You know, it just like it saddened me when they sold the first piece of land on the ranch that I got to ride my horses on forever, you know. And I truly miss, you know, I used to complain about hay and hauling hay. My dad, I was out there. First truck I ever drove was this 1967 GMC dump truck where I could see between the dashboard. And I was the little guy while the other guys were loading. We had several hundred acres of hay because of low yield. Low yield, so you had to have more acreage to do it. And I miss those days. I used to cry when I saw bales going down the roads. Like, I remember that because you were the little guy in the barn. You had to shove it up in the barn. It's like 106 degrees bearing down on you. It was hard work, and we did it. We didn't complain. We just did it.
Yeah.
And the cattle and stuff, we would go get – it was like every weekend we go to the river, cross over. And at this time, there's a guy that named the Colonel.
Which river are you talking about?
Pertinalis. And we would go over there, me and my brother, and go find the lead cow – and bring them all across.
Wow.
Take them up to the thing. And next weekend, because the fence was such falling apart, they would be back over there again. The colonel would call us up and say, hey, your cows are over here again. So,
You have the coolest stories, Brad. I always love listening to you.
When you were telling those stories, I just imagine you in your little Wranglers with your little cowboy hat and little button-down
shirt. I was kind of a long hair. I Brandon had, he was all clean cut and stuff, but I was kind of the hippie cowboy, and I had a little spur into the rodeo deal with team roping with him and you know, a little bit of riding. I rode some steers, almost some little junior bulls, you know, but I was never the fit because you get points graded off how you look. And I was like,
you didn't
boom.
Look, you didn't
and
have plus, the look.
Plus, the damn cows were making more money than I was, you know?
The story of our life.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Brad, thank you so much for come sharing some of your family history. You know, Dripping Springs owes a lot to your family, and we are just so grateful that you've chosen to share a little bit of your family's history here with us. And look, you guys can hear this man's voice, and anywhere he is, you hear him talk. You go over there and you introduce yourself, and he will tell you a story or 17.
Oh, yeah.
So
there's some history here, and it needs to be told.
Absolutely.
It needs to be talked about.
Yeah. I was thinking about this on the way in. I've been like, I got to have something that'll spur me, just like the shows and talking about Woodchalk and my brother and everything. But I think back to those days when I was just a kid and didn't even think about the people that were out there.
Yeah.
You know, I just, all those people, you know, and because we were kind of isolated because we were behind it and we can come and go as we want it to, and that it would become part of history is just amazing. And that's why it's really important to me to make it to the, hopefully Willie sticks around.
Yeah. Okay, Willie, you hear this.
Yeah.
Let's figure something out.
Well, he's
let's
embalmed at this point. He's going to live another 50 years.
That's true. Yeah. His head's going to be frozen Disney. So. Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
And you telling these stories now on our podcast, it's recorded on there and they'll live on. And people can hear these stories for years to come. Yeah. So, yeah, we appreciate you coming in, Brad.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Go ahead.
I can go on for hours, by the way.
Oh, you think?
We'll have you on again.
Okay.
Thanks. Awesome.
This show is brought to you in part by the Mallet Integrity Team, serving Dripping Springs, Austin, and the surrounding areas of Central Texas since 2004. When you need the best real estate advice and service, give them a call at 512-829-2062 or email them at malletintegrityteam.com.
Thanks for listening.
If you have comments or feedback, please email us at malletandmichelle@gmail.com.
Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Mallet and Michelle.
Listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Please follow us and leave a review.
Thanks again for listening.